In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 131. I'm always still amazed that we're still going. Listen, a great show for you today. I'll break it down in sort of a PTI kind of way. We're going to talk about the ALCS and NLCS. We'll give our predictions. Very surprising. I'd say modestly surprising. We are where we are, and we'll talk about why. We'll talk about the Astros and debate, you know, maybe the biggest dynasty of this century, perhaps. I mean, they haven't won the titles, but they certainly have the, you know, the appearances to prove it. We'll talk a little bit about Blaze Jordan, the Red Sox prospect who came out recently and talked about his mental health. We'll talk about Bryce Harper as well, not just his performance and, you know, sort of getting back at talking smack, but the culture of covering teams and sort of the unwritten rules and why the Brave smack talk got out when maybe it shouldn't have, but also, everything's fair game. We'll get into all those. John, how you doing?
I'm not bad. It's interesting that we're saying that we're going to give our predictions, and we're one round behind because our first predictions were a little rough, right? And it's not panning out the way everyone thought it is, which is...
No, you have all 300-win teams are gone.
They're gone.
Dodgers are gone. Orioles are gone. And the Braves, who had one of the most dominant seasons in the history of the game...
Yeah.
Are gone. Someone made a great point. I'm interested in your thoughts on this, that if this format was around in the Joe DiMaggio era,
how much
or whatever,
it would have changed the game.
They probably wouldn't have won that many.
Of course, because you got to remember, it's like you throw those extra variables in. It's like teams get hot, you know, even, you know, you got to be good to make the playoffs, but let's be honest, the Minnesota Twins weren't good, but they could have gotten hot, right?
Right. But even when the Twins, I mean, in the... You go back to, you know, even my childhood, how many 90-win teams make the playoffs?
You won the division, or that was it.
Right.
That was it.
So it definitely changes things. And in some ways, you know, it feels almost unfair. Are they rewarding first-place teams enough? I had someone come on my show who said that the wild card should be the day after the season's over.
I think it's not good as far as baseball goes to be waiting. If you're sitting around waiting 5 days to play, it just doesn't. It's not good. Yeah. It's not good. But at the same time, it's also not good if you lose your two of your superstar players. You know, you lose Wander Franco, you lose Urias for the Dodgers pitching. It's like your flaws show up after that.
Right.
You know,
two dudes who did not get hurt, by the way.
Right. And it's, and you know, it speaks volumes to the team, though. Like, those are important pieces of the puzzle. Were the Dodgers good enough to beat the Diamondbacks with Urias? I don't know. I just feel like their pitching is just wasn't good. They just got by on the season with good hitting. Right, but it doesn't help not having the guy there.
Interesting that all the legendary status of Mookie Betts, and he really wasn't a presence there at all. But let's move on. We're looking ahead, and you know, obviously I believe one of the series starts on Sunday. Then both teams play on Monday. Obviously, you don't want to compete too much with the NFL. You have the Rangers and the Astros. Obviously, it's the Battle of Texas, and then you have the Diamondbacks and the Phillies. I mean, listen, I don't love the Rangers, and I can't stand the Astros. I like Dusty Baker. I mean, so if I have to pick, you know, it's like the lesser of two evils type thing. I don't know squat about the Rangers, to be honest, other than one of my favorite Red Sox, Nathan Eovaldi, who should still be a Red Sox, is on that team.
I wish he was still a Yankee.
I mean, when he's healthy, guy's got...
It's amazing,
cojones,
right?
I mean, he's just gutsy.
Well, he's a big game pitcher. You know, it's like the Scherzers and those guys. When they're healthy, they're big game pitchers.
They know how to compete on a different level.
Yeah. But that being said, with the Rangers, I don't know if they have the pitching to match up against the Astros pitching, let alone, I mean, the Astros hitting and the Rangers. The Rangers, I think they can live up to the hitting hype with the Astros. I mean, the Astros are just good. I mean, let's be honest. They are good. They're in my opinion, they're going to go back to the World Series again. This is their seventh straight ALCS appearance.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, listen, the team is great, and they've kept their core together, and that's important. I mean, look, if you look at the Phillies, and this is a new core, right? Because Castellanos has only been there 2 years. Turner's only been there this year.
Yep.
And Harper's been there, what, 3 years now? 4 years. Three, I think. After 2018, yeah, four.
Yeah,
anyway,
asking the wrong guy.
Right. But at the same time, like, look at the core lineup with the Astros. Altuve, Jordan. Jordan's been there since 2019.
Bregman,
you know, even what's his name? Brantley. You know, like, he came over. You don't realize how long ago he played for the Indians,
I believe it was a trade deadline acquisition.
So it helps when you have those guys in place,
right?
And to
they're
do
also
the damage. And Kyle Tucker is one of the most unsung baseball players in the game right now, for
and
sure.
And they're just unflappable. Like, they just don't seem to get phased. And
right?
So,
they've
okay, so you're picking the Astros.
Yeah, I'm picking the Astros, and I hate to say it because I hate the Astros, but I mean, I just think they're the better team. And unfortunately, I think they might be able to beat the Phillies, which is my next pick.
You go ahead, I go hard. I'm picking the Rangers in seven just because I can't even hold my nose and pick the Astros. I dislike. And I like Dusty Baker, but I hate the Astros.
No,
so the Diamondbacks
Astros.
And the Phillies. Here's the thing is, listen, the D-backs are, they basically took some of the better talent that the Red Sox had in terms of front office. You know, Hazen and Lavulo. Lavulo was really well-liked. Some people wanted him to be manager of the Red Sox. And so there's a lot of support in Red Sox Nation for the D-backs. And, you know, they had that great start to the season. They had that sort of two-thirds of the way through swoon, and then they've recovered. And it was pretty dramatic, and it must have felt so good to beat the Dodgers. But the Phillies, I just think the environment, the Harper stuff, is just too good. Like, it's just too
They'll have home
compelling.
Field advantage, too.
And, like, it's just that stadium, like, it's awesome.
It's unreal. Like, just, well, then they got the whole Bryson Stott walk-up song. I mean, listen, I was at the Phillies game this year. I was at there right before Trey Turner turned it around. It was like he didn't even play the game I went to because he was down and out.
Really?
And I think it was like within two games, or it was the game after ours where they did the standing ovation for him and everything kind of turned around.
That was awesome, too.
But the Bryson Stott walk-up song, you know, you're like, hey-oh, hey-oh, okay. Like, everybody's singing that now. Like, my kids are singing that. And they're not even Phillies fans. I mean, they're, like, proxy Philly fans because of Dickerson. But it's an amazing atmosphere. The Twins atmosphere was great in their stadium. But that was also a hunger for baseball. But it's not the same as Philadelphia. Philadelphia is next level.
And it is.
It's next level.
And the truth is, it's one, you know, on our morning show, our producer, Matt Sorois, hates Philly. But you can't. I mean, take it away from the passion of the sports fans. And so I'm going to take the Phillies in six. I'm going to take the Rangers in seven, the Phillies in six. What are you doing?
So I don't think the Rangers are gonna take them to seven.
You pick the Astros.
We got Astros in five.
Okay.
And then I will go with the Phillies in Phillies and six.
Okay, so we're on board in the same.
I kind of hate to say Phillies and six because I think they're just such a better team and they're rolling so good now. But, you know, there is going to be a couple day layoff. So I want to say that I love Corbin Carroll. I love the vibe on that team. I do. I like the vibe on that team. Even though I was kind of scared of them jumping in that damn pool with those stupid pillars in the pool with people sit on. I'm like,
you
one
knew
of these
someone
guys,
was going to get hurt.
Yeah, I'm just thinking to myself, like, someone's going to come up short here and their ass is going to really hurt.
He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is episode 131 of Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. We brought up Bryce Harper. You know, the whole hype of him coming into baseball, I was kind of down on it. Daddy's involved. It just seemed,
the next great thing on the cover of Sports Illustrated at 16.
But you know what? The truth is, the dude delivers, and he's so. I think it's authentic. It's not fake, and it's not marketing. But the way he talks about Philly, it really makes you jealous that A, you don't have him on your team, and B, you don't live in Philly. Because, like, the Sox environment now, if it wasn't for the tourists, the place would be half empty.
Right.
And Philly, they just love him, and he loves him back. And I love when that happens.
Yeah, he plays into it, too, right down to his clothes. I mean, you see him when they've had the pictures of him walking
in. The inlaying of his blazer.
Yeah. And he loves the Philly fanatic. It's on basically any. He has something, every part of his uniform has some sort of Philly fanatic at some given time on him, too. It's, you know, we've talked about it over and over again. The guy is baseball. He's great for the game, and he's next level. He really is. He is one of those guys that's going to go down as one of the best players. And that, I mean, a lot of people throw that around, right? They throw around, oh, he's one of the best. He's one of the best. Like, Bryce Harper will be one of the best because it's going to be the intangibles of the postseason experience. Yeah. It's going to be just what you talked about, how he controls a city, how he controls a team, how he controls a vibe, how he feeds off the vibe. Listen, only certain players get better when it gets harder. Big Papi was one of them. Yeah. He got better when it got harder. And there's guys here and there, but there is only a select few that really deliver.
Yeah, I think that's 100% on point. And, you know, as somebody who has ruined a news conference or two because of naivete and whatnot, and I was in a few locker rooms that I didn't belong in, I didn't really know the backstory about, you know, so this guy on the Braves talked smack and really turned the series around. He talked smack and it got back to Harper and he really used it as fuel and he probably manipulated his own brain to make it motivate him. But just tell the, because I didn't realize that this was why people were like, any schlub, you know, can get a press credential and that hurts things. Just talk about, you know, people who don't know what the heck happened.
Well, also, first of all, for anybody that doesn't know what the whole story is behind, it goes into game two where the game ended and Michael Harris making an awesome play in the outfield, throwing it into the infield to double up Harper at first, which was the first time that combination of play ever happened in the postseason. Right. It was like an 8-5-3 double play. But if you look at the play, Harper slips on that play. Now, granted, he probably shouldn't have been rounding the bases as hard, but Harper's an amped up dude, and that's the run you need.
Oh yeah, I don't question him for going hard.
He slips, he comes back. He probably doesn't slip. He probably gets back. So you got to look at the context of the play. The way the shortstop we're talking about, Orlando Arcia, says in the locker room afterwards, "Attaboy Harper." It's almost like Harper was a total goof in the whole thing, and it really wasn't that. It really wasn't that. So in that, if you look at it the way it really was, it's even worse on Orlando Arcia's part to be saying that, because in the grand scheme of things, Harper probably does get back on that play, and it really isn't an attaboy Harper moment.
But even if he didn't get back, I think he was just trying to score or whatever.
Exactly. But what he in the locker room, he's overheard by a podcaster, Jason Mintz, who runs the Cespedes Barbecue podcast. They've been around for a while doing blogging, and you know they have a pretty successful thing. But he's not a guy who covers the team, right? And that did not set well with a lot of reporters who cover the team or MLB analysts who follow the team regularly. And he put this out to the public that he was heard saying, "Attaboy Harper, Attaboy Harper." And of course, look what happened afterwards.
So the traditional media was upset because the unwritten rule is they wouldn't have released that.
Yeah. And listen, you've been in locker rooms. Mm-hmm. I've been in locker rooms. I was in the locker room at the Subway Series in 2000. And believe me, all right, my past said technician. Now, technically, I was the photographer. I was doing the actual video, doing the interviews with a reporter. So there was other people that had the same exact credentials as mine as technicians that were cable pullers, that were whatever you want to be. Part of the operation, of the news operation, the covering it, but definitely not people that needed to be in the locker room.
And you still got in.
And you were still in there. So when I say, like, you were in the locker room, like, interviewing these people, now, granted, they weren't doing the champagne celebration because they hadn't won. It was after, like, the, you know, game two. But there was so many people in there that did not belong in there.
Right. So there's two things I'd say to that. One is my favorite story about me is when I was covering, when Mary Lemieux came back from, I don't know if he came out of retirement or back from cancer, I don't remember which one, but I was a pretty young reporter. And it was, I think it might have been in Boston when he came back. I can't remember. And there were so many, I don't know if you know this, like, say you're eight deep in a scrum. Usually what happens is questions get asked, and then the inner circle gets
breaks
satisfied.
Out.
They leave, and then the outer circle comes in and basically asks the same questions, right? And it just happens to be that way unless they have an organized news conference with people out and their chairs and everything like that. So, he had really not engaged physically in the game, and a lot of people think he was kind of soft anyway. And so a couple of people had asked him, you know, whether, you know, he was purposely avoiding contact, and he got pissed. And I guessed toward, and I was in the outer circle. I was out of earshot. And I guessed he said, "If I get asked one more question about physical play, I'm out." And I was aggressive, and we all came in. My first question was, you know, "Were you conscious of, you know, not getting hit out there?" And he freaking walked away. And
he didn't say anything, he just walked away?
Yeah. He said, "I'm done." And so what happened was is that I shrunk. You know what I mean? I sort of, and then I was, you know, and only really people didn't know me, so they couldn't really figure it out. And I just remember, like at least four times, who was the blank hole who did that?
Yeah.
Who the F did that? And I just was like, you know, nothing to see here. I just
who's the guy that didn't vote for Derek Jeter?
So, but here's what I want to say, though, is that I don't know where I am. I'm not the gutsiest guy in terms of divulging racy or really like big time information. I'm not an investigative reporter. But what I would say is like, what's the, I know it stinks when guys that shouldn't be there are there and then report poorly or ask stupid questions, but like what he came out with, like why should that have been stuff that stays in the locker room? Like why can't that be reported on?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that it's that bad. I think it's more of
people are coming down on the guy.
Well, I think
hard.
It's more of the fact that he's not.
So he had. It wasn't that he reported
a journalist,
right? But it's not that he let that comment from the guy.
He wasn't
public.
Asked.
It was that he didn't. He hadn't earned the right.
At least
to report
you asked,
it.
Brian. Right? You asked. You asked your question. Why couldn't he ask the question? If he heard it, why couldn't he go over and say, listen, I heard you saying Attaboy Harper, you know, do you want to elaborate on that? Do you think,
that would have made it okay?
I think he fell going around second base. Do you think he would have made it back to the base? Or do you think he's just over aggressive? Be a journalist. Instead of just being, I'm going to go flap it out on my blog or whatever.
Yeah. See, it comes down to it, I think he should be able to, anything in there that he hears, unless it's like, you know, I'm going to go meet my girlfriend, don't tell my wife type thing. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
that's
perfectly
personal.
Fine then.
But
what
the point
if you're
is
calling
like,
someone a dick?
I'm just saying, like, I
like
think.
You can't, like, you shouldn't be allowed to be. Like,
why? Why not? Like, as long as it's not personal, it relates to the game, it relates to people in the game, and you know, it's in the locker room and you're allowed in the locker room. I'm not saying I'm going to take this argument to the mat. I'm just saying that I don't have a huge. He doesn't probably belong in there. They should be a little more selective, maybe. But at the same time, I think that to report on that isn't such a big deal.
I want to know the context, too. Like, there's no video of it. So I want. Right. Was it just something that was like, yeah, Attaboy Harper? Or was it like, was he dancing right. around?
It does
like,
merit context.
Like, I mean, you got a guy on your team who likes to take selfies of himself when he hits home runs. You got another guy who's going to be MVP who literally does like any kind of dance you can think of after he hits a home run. Like, you wonder if they were in there dancing it. Attaboy Harper, Attaboy Harper, and there's everyone else decided, well, we're not going to go with that, you know?
Right.
Or was it just an offbeat comment? Either right. way, it didn't work out.
Right. It would definitely motivated Harper. He knows how to motivate himself, and it worked. I remember reading it when it came out at the beginning of October. And, I just remember when Blaze Jordan was drafted and the name and the hype. It's almost Harper-esque.
As I say, it's much, much like, yeah.
Yeah, and he swings out of his shoes. And he came out at the beginning of the month with a pretty long post talking about his battle with depression and anxiety. And listen, we're in a different era. Like, whatever we dealt with, we always internalized, and we dealt with it ourselves, and mm-hmm. for better or for worse. And I think that I'm amazed if it's all these things, assuming they're all authentic, that people can perform at that high a level and have these issues. But and it was pretty dramatic that a kid, he's barely 20, I think,
yeah,
came out and just talked about there was one moment where he was in the hospital because he couldn't breathe, but they couldn't find anything wrong with him. And then they realized that he can't breathe because of it. He is having a panic attack.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing after I read what he posted, the one thing that stuck out the most to me was, and you hear it, I mean, you do hear it all the time, is that he hid it so well, his own parents couldn't even tell. And I'm thinking to myself, like, you know, I got a 17-year-old who's going through the whole stressing out about trying to play baseball in college, trying to get into college, doing all the applications, taking AP classes, honors classes. I mean, and like stuff that I couldn't even do now, right? Definitely couldn't do it in high school. And the amount of the amount of work that he has to do, and then the teams and all that. But then there's Blaze Jordan, who's on a whole other level,
right?
You know, who's got to play a professional sport, who hits all these home runs, who's supposed to be the next great thing, whose baseball card is selling for $3,000, and it's like, you know, he's supposed to be that, and next thing you know, like he thinks he's dying in a hospital because he can't even breathe. Now, you know. Was that the same thing that was happened to Josh Hamilton, and he found his outlet in a bottle and
a needle
and a needle, right? There's different ways, you know. Dwight Gooden, Daryl Strawberry, the list goes on and on. When Zach Greinke had these issues, they thought he was crazy. He walked away from baseball. Now look at him. He's one of the best longevity pitchers there is.
And kind
Joey
of
Votto,
yeah.
Same thing. Everyone called Joey Votto crazy. He wasn't crazy. He had issues. He needed help.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because you know, I've had my own issues, you know, at a couple of moments with some mental health challenges. And
nobody does. There's not one person that doesn't have a family member or knows somebody
right. That
has mental issues. And if you don't, there is somebody and you just don't know it yet.
Well, because, you know, because I find myself, I want to say this in a way that's delicate and people understand it in the right context. Sometimes I don't have as much empathy as I should. And I'm like, well, you know, we just handled it. Why can't you just handle it? And the thing is, and sometimes I feel like it's just sort of can be, and this is my thought process. This is my inner thought. So I'm going to come full circle. So be patient with me. And I'm like, well, why, you know, what, just work it out. Like, why do you need to talk about it? Just, or whatever. I have all these different things that some ways compromise the authenticity of it. When I think of like Blaze Jordan, it's like, he's still trying to make it. He still has to prove that he has to play. And yet he's talking about it. So now I guess I'm understanding a little more, because I'm always like, why are all these people coming out and talking about it? Because I know people in the media who've done it, who've talked about it publicly to honestly save their jobs.
Yeah,
you know, they've done it for not necessarily the right reasons. They've done it because they weren't getting renewed and they want to make sure they're not fireable. And they did. I know that's happened.
Yeah,
and so I've been less empathetic. But with someone like Blaze Jordan, it really was a light bulb moment for me, because it's not like, he's not quitting. He's not excusing what he's done. He wants to make it as a baseball player, and he wants people to know that he's dealing with this as he goes on this journey. And I was like, okay, I get it, you know, and so it elevates my respect for it. And I'm just coming in with my own set of like unconscious bias. I'm just admitting my blind spots when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I have a, like you said, I have a hard time, like the empathy thing. Like When I working in the television news business for so many years and being like, I'll call it the front lines. Like you're taking the video and stuff. It's a different beast than seeing it on TV. And like my bones got callous. My soul got callous.
Anesthetized.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it was hard for me to even be like empathetic to my own kids a lot of times when they were growing up. Like something would happen. I'd be like, you know, just get over it. Get over it. Everything will be fine. And it's like, and then you're sitting to yourself like, you cover so much bad stuff all the time and things are good for you. And you're starting to say like, well, maybe there's something wrong with me. Like, you know, like things are going good for me, and you start feeling guilty for yourself. And it's like, everything's so bad. And it's like, but then you realize it's like, you know, everybody's got something going on. Like either they're public about it or they're not, or, you know, sometimes it just boils over and you just never see the person again. That's just how it works. And hopefully, like Blaze Jordan, and hopefully the next person who's talking about it and talking about it and talking about it helps. Because, listen, everybody says they didn't think anybody would do anything or they never expected someone to be like that. And I'm telling you right now, I've covered it a zillion times. It's always that person that you never expected does something or has some problem, and they're just not willing to get the help or talk about it.
And I think that, you know, we as people, you know, we're becoming more forgiving, but we've been not forgiving enough on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
And whether it's, you know, Michael Phelps to Simone Biles or, you know, Michaela Schifrin, who I think are just, I don't think people know how great they are, like how amazing what they've done is, and to be able to actually, like, so it's hard to fathom that they had those kind of issues, because they must be doubly mentally strong on the other side to block them out and compete. But like, when you think of those three sports, and I'll close on this, those are individual sports that if you make one mistake, you lose. But, you know, Harper can trip and lose a game, and he wins the next couple games, he wins.
Right.
In hockey, you turn the puck over all the bleeping time. In basketball, you miss 10 out of 20 shots, you could still be the player of the game.
Yeah.
But in those sports, no. You make one mistake, you lose. It's over. 4 years of work is done. And the
imagine
pressure
carrying
that
carrying all
is,
the pressure of the sponsors.
And then having mental challenges on the side. Like, forget about it. If you're perfect, that crap is hard.
You're a brand.
And then
with no margin for error. A brand with no margin for error.
Zero. And then I'll add on to that, that for anybody would be insane. The add on the other things you might be dealing with is just next level. So, you know, it's funny, at 52, I find myself that the Blaze Jordan story to me, this is my point, is it gave me another level of empathy and understanding, which I guess I didn't really have.
Yeah. I guarantee by him talking about it, it will definitely trigger other people, which is good.
Yeah.
John, great stuff. We got to make sure when people, we tease this, get people to listen to the end, because that was a really good conversation. You've been listening to episode 131 of Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.